Hello, friends. This is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington, on 1150 AM just outside Seattle in the United States. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. We will have only the best psychics, scientists, and UFO people in the world on our program, and I guarantee, my friends, it'll be the most interesting radio program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will simply not hear elsewhere. And today's no exception. We will have two wonderful, fascinating guests on. The first guest is Professor Dean Radin of the Institute for Noetic Sciences in Petaluma, California, a world-renowned scientist for his study into what he calls psi phenomenon, PSI phenomenon, or psychic phenomenon. And our second hour will be Suzanne Ward of Matthew Speaks, a absolutely fascinating, famous psychic who's been in touch with her son since 1980, has been giving messages to the world of love and peace, and I'm sure this will be truly an out-of-this-world interview. Out-of-this-world radio is one of the top-rated radio programs in the Seattle area, and we are also the fastest-growing psychic and UFO radio program in the world, with listeners in over 60 countries. I'm also told by reliable sources that my show also has many listeners and supporters off-planet from the members of the Galactic Alliance, and I want to thank them so much for listening as well. They tell me that my radio program is the most popular UFO and psychic radio program in this part of the Milky Way galaxy. So, my friends from off-planet, welcome to the program. We are entirely supported by donations, and for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. For even a dollar will help, and I really appreciate all your support. I have a new column on my webpage called Ask Ted. When you click on the website at www.outofthisworld1150.com, go to About Us, and then on the right side, just click on Ask Ted. On a weekly basis, I will write a column on psychic phenomena, UFOs, and metaphysics and spiritual matters. And people are also welcome to write me with their brief question concerning their soul purpose, a spiritual issue, or a particular problem. I will answer everything for free, and I'd love to help any way I can. Recently, I gave a number of readings, 10 readings at the Meeker Mansion in Puyallup, Washington, and my accuracy rate was between 90 and 100%. So I've gotten better at it over the years, and I'd love to help people. We're also, Out of This World Radio is also looking for sponsors and advertisers for the show, and if you'd like to advertise in my program, please give me a call at 1-888-879-8339, or you can email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. The purpose of my program is to raise consciousness to make this world a better place to live, and I know with everyone's help, we can make this planet a much better and happier place. In the coming weeks, I want to take a minute and tell you who we'll be having on. We'll be having on Laura Hurst, who's written some amazing books on the causes and cures for autism, provided by channeled information from some famous spirits, including Albert Einstein, Robert F. Kennedy, and President John F. Kennedy. Her interview on this show will definitely one you won't want to miss. Albert Einstein recently appeared twice in spirit form on my program in the interviews with University of Washington Professor Jerry Pollack and famous London professor Rupert Sheldrake. To listen to their fascinating interviews, just go to the website at www.outofthisworld1150.com and click on recent shows. In the coming months, we will also have one of the world's most famous spiritualists, Dr. Deepak Chopra, on the show soon, who's coming to Seattle in April, along with Princess Margaret Louise of the Norwegian royal family, who will be appearing on the program live by telephone from Oslo, Norway, to talk about angels and other wonderful things. I know I have a lot of listeners in Scandinavia and in Norway in particular, and I just want to tell my friends there to please stay tuned. I'm sure you'll find her interview very interesting. Finally, I wanted to take a few minutes to tell you about this wonderful conference I'm sponsoring called the Galactic Wisdom Conference in Gig Harbor, Washington, from March 6th to the 8th. It'll be located at the Ginn at Gig Harbor, located only 10 minutes from Tacoma or 40 minutes from Seattle. It has a wonderful, modern, and clean ballroom with an excellent restaurant and even a hot tub. For those flying into Seattle for the conference, there's a shuttle service that goes 21 times a day between the Seattle airport and directly to the venue of the site at the Inn at Gig Harbor. For more information, please see our website at www.galacticwisdomconference.com. From now through the middle of next month, Valentine's Day, there's a special discount on registrations for only $197 for the entire event, a three-day event, including free psychic readings from some of the world's best psychics and spiritual leaders such as Jerry Wills, who can remove alien implants. Jerry, actually, we'll be having a special free three-hour healing workshop Saturday night, March 7th, from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. That's all included in the conference. For those who have been abducted by the reptilians or the Greys, aliens, this is a golden opportunity to get rid of any implants. When I was in Norway last October at a UFO conference there, I saw firsthand proof that Jerry Wills has removed alien implants from people there at the conference, so I know he can do it in March at my conference. In addition, I wanted to tell you, Dr. Susan Shumsky will be flying in from New York City for the conference. She's considered the world's authority on healing auras and chakras. For example, for those who've had experienced problems in their love lives due to a damaged or hurt heart chakra, Dr. Shumsky can provide wonderful healing advice from her. For those interested also in the scientific and spiritual work of the late Dr. Masaru Emoto, Michiko Hayashi and Dr. Yasu Nimoto of the Emoto Peace Project will be flying in from Tokyo, Japan, to give a special workshop on the late Dr. Emoto's famous work on love and gratitude. I'm now doing a fundraiser for the printing and distribution of the Emoto Peace Project's children's books, and the goal of this work is to reach children between the ages of 3 to 12 to teach them the value of living in harmony with each other so that by the time they're adults, they'll be far more interested in creating a happier planet instead of being engaged in endless wars in the Middle East, which last for decades. In addition, at the conference, we'll be having Lois Berman, a famous Boston psychic who has her own psychic radio and television programs. She will also be giving a workshop and providing free psychic readings at the conference. In my opinion, Lois is one of the best psychics in North America. She's simply amazing, and I know people will really enjoy learning from her. Phoenix Redhawk, also a well-known spiritual healer from Long Island, is flying in from New York to give a special workshop on spiritual healing. She is available also for free readings, and she's one of the best on the East Coast. We will also have wonderful Seattle psychics Teresa Carroll, Darcy Adams, and Darren McFarlane at the conference, who will be also giving readings, as well as the amazing, wonderful Robert and Rachel Zink from the Portland area with his amazing healing work. This is a conference, my friends, you will not to miss. The conference also includes free full breakfast on Sunday and Saturday mornings, and if you can't attend all 3 days, there's a special daily rate of just $97 per day. And if you're a student, please call or email directly at 1-888-879-8339 or email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, and students will get a 50% off the regular rate. You know, for the cost of the conference, this is far less than paying for a psychic reading because you'll be getting 3 full days of free psychic readings from some of the world's most famous psychics and UFO people. If you'd like to stay at the Inn at Gig Harbor, their phone number is area code 253-853, I believe, 1111. It's on the Galactic Wisdom Conference website at www.galacticwisdomconference.com. And when you call, they will give you a special discounted rate for staying at the hotel. I've kept these registration prices as low as possible with the discounts for students to make it possible for as many people to attend, because the purpose of this conference is to raise consciousness and make this planet a better and happier place. Before we begin in a few minutes, I'd like to thank the many wonderful sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol, who's been signing the website and providing moral support, my dear friend Ann Nelson, business professor at Walla Walla College, who helped me start my program, and my dear friend Michiko Hayashi of the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo, Japan. As well as my friends in the Galactic Alliance who's been supporting the show, and my angelic and earthly family, as well as my wonderful sound engineer, Eric Ryder, and my station manager, Eric Crema, without whose help and support this show would not have been possible. You can always listen to the show live from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at www.1150kknw.com/listen. And after the show, you can always listen to past shows at www.outofthisworld1150.com and clicking on any one of our guests. We are on Twitter at Ted Marr, OTW Radio, and on Facebook at Out of This World Radio. We will be going to our wonderful guest in just a moment. I think I'd like to run a promo first to get our first guest on the line. We could run Lorraine Hurley and her conference, Eric, there, if you can find it, so we can get Dean Raiden on the line, or perhaps Karen Winnerlin is fine. Okay, I'll wait till Eric finds that. Okay, hold on, friends, just a moment. We'll go to a promo, and then we'll bring on Professor Raiden from California. Hello, friends. My name's Ted Marr. I'm the radio show host of the Out of This World radio program. We focus in on psychic phenomenon and metaphysics. We have in a studio today one of the best astrologers and tarot readers in the Seattle area, Karen Winnerlin. Karen, how did you become interested in this field?
Because I'm a control freak, like most of us. I need to know what's going on in life. And so tarot and astrology just answer those questions for us. Tarot is a present tense oracle. It talks about what's going on in life right now. And astrology looks at the big picture and says, am I headed the way I want to be? Am I being who I want to be?
Karen, how do people get a hold of you if they'd like a reading?
Show up at East West Bookshop every Friday. Or you can email me at Karen@SeattleAstrologer.com. Again, you can reach me at East West Bookshop every Friday or at Karen@SeattleAstrologer.com.
Thanks, Karen. Hello, listeners. We have on the line Dr. Lorraine Hurley. She has her own wonderful radio talk show out of Boston called Uncommon Awareness. And Dr. Hurley, could you tell us a little bit about this conference you're having in March?
Well, absolutely, Ted. But I'll start by saying that, you know, we're all entranced with the mystery and wonder of life. But really, one needn't look any further than nature to observe and experience profound mystery and wonder, because the cycles of energy, water, air, and earth are directed by the innate intelligence of the life streams to continually regenerate, invigorate our world, and strengthen our life force. Now, nowhere is this more apparent, splendid, and beautiful than in the pristine rainforest of Costa Rica. I've been there. And I am Dr. Lorraine Hurley, as Ted said, and I'm inviting you, his listeners, to join healers, researchers, and world-renowned scientist Dr. Gerald Pollack this March for a cutting-edge educational and healing retreat in the heart of the Costa Rican rainforest. You're going to experience conscious reconnection to nature's power through sacred geometry, ozone, orgone, and water-based healing therapies. There'll be shaman-led journeys through the rainforest. We'll be swimming with dolphins. We'll be sleeping in treehouses and much, much more. Now, not only will you experience firsthand the healing power of nature, we're going to teach you how to bring these healing practices into your daily life at home. So if you'd like details and if you'd like to register, visit www.fiboforum.com. That's www.fiboforum.com. And I'm encouraging you to give yourself the gift of pure life, or as they say in Costa Rica, pura vida. I hope to see you there.
Wonderful, Lorraine. And is there a phone number people can call if they have questions?
Visit www.fiboforum.com. That's www.fiboforum.com. Or call 508-714-0622. That's 508-714-0622.
And the dates for your conference are March 20th through the 29th?
Right.
Stay informed with news, traffic, and weather at the top of the hour, weekdays on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Hello, friends. We're back on the air again with Professor Dean Raiden of the Institute of Noetic Sciences in Petaluma, California. Professor Raiden, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, wonderful. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You have an amazing background. I know from reading your book, Entangled Minds, that you started out as a music student. Is that right? And you used to play violin, as I recall?
Yeah, I was on the concert violinist track for many years, up through graduate school even.
Wonderful, wonderful. And then I remember in your book you said that you decided to go to, you always had an interest in what you now call is the pi concept or psi concept, and you were interested in how things were connected with each other in metaphysics. You've had an amazing career after that. You graduated with a BSE degree in electrical engineering, magna cum laude, with an honors in physics from the University of Massachusetts, then also later graduated with a Master of Science in Electrical Engineering and a PhD in psychology from the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana. I went to Illinois myself. I've got a master's degree. It's a wonderful campus. And then you've worked on advanced communications research and development at AT&T Bell Laboratories and GTE Laboratories. And the last 2 decades, you've been engaged in consciousness research. You've held appointments at Princeton in the past, University of Edinburgh, University of Nevada, several Silicon Valley think tanks. And you're the author, co-author of over 200 technical and popular articles, a dozen book chapters, and several books, including the best-selling Conscious Universe and Entangled Minds. And your latest book, Supernormal, is and you've also had technical articles ranging in journals from Foundations of Physics and Physics Essays to Psychological Bulletin and the Journal of Consciousness. You've had an amazing career, and I just want to thank you so much today, Professor Radin, for coming on today.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Yes, well, there's so much to talk about. The preface of your book, Entangled Minds, is very interesting because you write, when you drill down to the core of even the most solid-looking material, separateness dissolves, and all that remains, like the smile of the Cheshire Cat from Alice in Wonderland, are relationships which are extending curiously throughout time and space. And one of the founders of quantum theory, Eric Schrodinger, dubbed this peculiarity entanglement. And it was fascinating because your book is about entangled minds and about how things are so connected and what they don't seem to be. I remember reading in your book about how traditional science in the past has been somewhat reticent about accepting this as a field of study. This book, I think, was written back in 2007 or 2006?
2006.
Six. Yep. Are things better now? Is the scientific community more open to your ideas now about entangled minds and psi and metaphysics than they were back then?
Well, it's difficult to talk about the scientific community, mm-hmm. because it's like talking about the government. It consists of millions of people with millions of different opinions. It's probably a little bit easier to say what do different disciplines within science think. Mm-hmm. And that's because I've often seen that even for professors in the same department at the same university, that science is built in silos, as it is in many human affairs. There's so much to know in any one given topic that it's really not even possible to know what your next-door neighbor is studying in any detail. And so there are many, many different mainstream thoughts or current concepts within science. Mm-hmm. So I would say that from that point of view, if you look at people who are becoming interested in things like quantum biology, it's the expression of quantum mechanics within the biological or living systems, they're becoming much more open to the idea that part of the way that we understand how the body works and how the mind and the brain are related to each other, part of that is sufficiently described by classical physics, which is kind of a refinement of common sense. Mm-hmm. But some of it goes beyond that. Some requires a deeper understanding of physics, and as soon as you go into quantum mechanics, you now have to get a more expansive sense of how things are connected. Mm-hmm. So people in quantum biology are quite open to the possibility of psychic and mystical experience because they can see how it connects that world with living systems. For people who are involved in trying to see the connections between science and spirituality, and there are a growing number of scientists and scholars who are interested in that topic, they're also very interested. There's a subset of people within the neurosciences who are slowly coming to understand that while the brain and consciousness are clearly related to each other in some way, that it may not be the case that the brain creates consciousness. And if it doesn't create consciousness, it raises the question then of, well, where does it come from? And what are its properties? So the subgroup within the neurosciences who are interested in those kinds of questions, they're becoming much more sympathetic to the kind of research I do as well. And you can find the same in almost every discipline. There's always some subset that is not satisfied with the notion that we live in a world that is adequately described as a mechanistic, completely isolated kind of reality. So that was very popular in the 19th century, somewhat still popular in the 20th, as we are now beginning of the 21st century. I think that idea of the universe as a clockwork will slowly begin to go away.
Sure. I just want to share with you a fascinating, you had so many fascinating examples, Professor Radin, in your book, Entangled Minds, and I wanted to mention this to you and your many my many listeners, that you mentioned the example of a gentleman from England who had virtually no brain, but yet he had an IQ of 126. Fascinating. And then, which begs the question, what was, I mean, if he didn't have a brain, then what was he using to think? There must have been something else there.
Right. I should clarify that. In that case, there are actually a number of cases similar to that. This is when somebody has so-called water on the brain, hydrocephalic. If the brain is solely pushed aside because of the cerebral spinal fluid, which is leaking into your head, it doesn't actually mean that there's no brain. What it means is that the usual structure of the brain, as we understand it when you see pictures of the brain, that's gone. The brain is flattened to like a pancake that's on the inside of your skull. But if it happens slowly enough, you're able to, the brain is so plastic and so easy to rewire itself that you're able to maintain reasonably good behavior and memory and all the rest of it. It just gets remapped onto a very different shape. If it happened overnight, you're probably dead. But as I said, when it happens slowly, we're fluid enough that we're able to adapt to it. The reason that that's an interesting case, though, is that here you have an instance where the usual way we think of the structures of the brain being related to each other and its association with consciousness, this kind of an example, as I said, there are at least a dozen examples like this that are known now, it pretty seriously stretches our understanding of how the morphology of the brain, the shape of the brain, and the function of the brain are related to each other. It means we need to be a little more clever in thinking about the relationship between consciousness, awareness, intelligence, cognition, and the brain itself. And another way to look at this is on studies that are looking at intelligence within crows. So there are lots of crows all over the place. It turns out they are incredibly intelligent, as are some parrots and some other birds, and yet their brains is about the size of a walnut. Well, how does that happen? And the answer is we don't actually know yet.
Well, that's just fascinating. And, you know, one of the premises of your book, fascinating book, Professor Radin, is that our physical reality is connected in such a way to with each other and with the reality around us in ways we don't even realize yet. And you mentioned about psychic phenomenon, and I have to tell you this, that I do readings, and I did readings here a couple weeks ago at a local place. I had 10 people come in, and I'd never met them. I had no idea where they were from. But we sat down quietly, and my accuracy rate was between 90 and 100%. I could read their minds, give them the answers that they wanted to know about. Even before they asked the question, I knew what they were going to ask. And there's no logical explanation for psychic phenomenon like that, but yet I've got this ability. I've had it for years, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the question then is, could science figure out what is the connection? How do you know something of that sort? And so far, science has a history of about 150 years in simply studying the nature of the phenomenon itself to make sure that when someone like yourself has that experience, well, what was it? Was it coincidence? Was it simply looking at the person and figuring out things by looking at them and so on? And so after a century of that sort of thing, we're highly confident that genuine forms of telepathy and precognition and clairvoyance actually do exist. In terms of the theoretical explanation for it, we're still lagging behind. Mm-hmm. But one of the reasons I wrote Entangled Minds was to bring to people's attention that the nature of physics has been changing dramatically over the last 50 years or so, and it will continue to change, and the direction of the change, the direction of our understanding of the physical world is changing in a direction that becomes more and more compatible with psychic experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I can project, maybe it'll take 50 years before we get there, but at some point, the science will have developed so that when somebody describes a psychic experience, we'll have a reasonably good theoretical understanding of how that can be. Mm-hmm. So we're not there yet, but we're heading in that direction. I'm pretty confident of that.
Fascinating, just fascinating. The other thing, too, is, and I'm sure you're familiar with the work of Dr. Masaru Emoto. He was on my show last July, and he did many intention experiments, sending love and light, for example, and good thoughts to a glass of water, which actually he proved that actually changed the physical structure on the molecular level of those water molecules to beautiful crystals. If you took a same glass of water and had various people send negative thoughts of hatred, for example, to another glass of water, on the molecular level, the molecules of the water would appear disoriented, disjointed, and very, very differently. It's a fascinating. His work was just fascinating, and I'm sure you know about it. But again, how do you explain something like that?
Well, I had the pleasure of seeing Dr. Emoto give a series of talks. And after one of those talks, I went up to him and said, would you be interested in participating in an experiment under double-blind conditions? Because up to that point, when he published his books and he gave his talks and so on, he described it pretty much the way that you just did. Mm-hmm. But if you were skeptical about that result, you would say, well, maybe the beautiful crystals were a small selection of a much larger group of pictures that were taken. And if you select the pictures, you can get anything you want. So a double-blind experiment would say that when the analyst is analyzing the crystals, that the analyst would not know whether this was a so-called treated piece of water or untreated piece of water. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Emoto immediately agreed to do the experiment, and we ended up doing two different experiments where his analyst in Japan was sent samples of water that were prepared by us here in California, and then they sent back all of the pictures without knowing which ones were for treated or untreated samples of water. And then I put all of the pictures on the web and asked people to simply look at each picture and assess how beautiful they thought the crystal was. So in some cases, there really wasn't even a crystal at all. It's like a piece of blob of an ice, which didn't look like much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And in other cases, there were very nice-looking crystals. The bottom line is that after looking at hundreds of such pictures, that on average, you can see whether people thought that the treated crystals were more beautiful or not. And the answer in both experiments was the same, that the treated water, meaning this is water that has been intentionally blessed by a bunch of people, mm-hmm. that water was more beautiful, or at least the crystals were more beautiful than the untreated water. So this was nice. I mean, it wasn't, the effect we saw was not as clear as what Dr. Emoto has written about in his books. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get a startlingly beautiful crystal, but it's very rare. Most of the time, these are pretty average-looking crystals.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we explain it? Well, one thing, the first thing you would do then is if you're presented with, from a scientific perspective, this is an anomaly, something happened, there's some relationship between intention and water, you'd want to see, well, what if somebody else used some other method? And so there have been quite a few studies using healers who, for example, would hold a vial of water while they're doing healing. This is non-contact healing, like therapeutic touch.
Mm-hmm.
And then there would be identical vials of water held by somebody who wasn't doing healing, and then you do analysis of the water afterwards to find out if the healing intention affected the water. Things like infrared spectroscopy and Raman spectroscopy and surface tension and other characteristics of water has been identified or measured, and usually it does show an effect. So it suggests that there is something about the molecular bonding that is altered by an act of intention. That, unfortunately, begs the question of, well, how did it get altered? Why did it get altered? And there we don't know yet.
Sure.
So it's through making many, many experiments and different measurements of this type that you can begin to gain confidence that something is happening.
Sure.
Some colleagues, for example, did an experiment with samples of water that were held by healers and other samples which were held by non-healers, and then the water was used to water plants. And then they measured the height and the growth rate of the plants, and there were huge differences, obvious visual differences. So again, that doesn't say why it's working, but that if something is happening seems reasonably clear at this point. And as we get new instruments, new methods of measuring what's happening in water and in other substances, we may be able to get some clues as to what is actually happening and why.
When Dr. Emoto was on my program on July 25th last year, Professor Radin, we discussed his wonderful scientific work. And then about 3:30 p.m. Seattle time, I asked him spontaneously if these same techniques of sending good energy would help, for example, bring about peace. And he said, yes, they should work. So I decided at that point spontaneously to ask him and my other listeners in over 60 countries around the world to send love and light to the Palestinians and to the Israelis who were then fighting in the Gaza Strip. Mm-hmm. And so what happened, we did that for a few minutes, and I went off with the rest of my show. We ended about 4 p.m. Seattle time, and at about 8:30 I got to where I was staying, and I usually don't watch CNN, but I turned on the television and had CNN on, and the Israelis and the Palestinians, Professor Radin, had just agreed to a 12-hour ceasefire starting at 9 p.m. Seattle time to exchange, to give food and medical supplies to the wounded and take care of, on a humanitarian basis, they're wounded from both sides. And I was just so pleased, and it was totally unannounced. They just had done this spontaneously. So I think the intention experiment that we had done about 4 or 5 hours earlier around the world with my many listeners, and I want to thank everyone for doing that, really worked.
It might have worked.
Yeah.
The problem with experiments where something amazing happens is to judge it against similar experiments where nothing happened.
Sure.
Or where we won't be able to measure it.
Sure.
So what we've done in to try to look at the effect of large-scale meditations and efforts similar to what you're describing, and of course there's a wide range of such experiments that have been done, but the approach that my colleagues and I have taken is called the Global Consciousness Project,
mm-hmm.
and it looks at what is the effect not so much of people intending a certain outcome, but simply attending? So on Sunday, there'll be the Super Bowl, and you'll have some 100 million people or something like that paying attention to the same thing at the same time because it's broadcast live.
Right.
And a question could be raised then of what happens when you have 100 million minds all paying attention to the same thing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little as though you normally, if you think about the attention of each individual, it's scattered all over the place. Everyone's mm-hmm. thinking about something else. So something unusual happens in mental space, where mm-hmm. a large chunk of the mental space is now all pointing in the same direction. So what we use to see if that makes a difference in the world is... Mm-hmm. We use electronic circuits called random number generators, which are designed to produce sequences of zeros and ones in a completely random sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on a quantum mechanical principle. So in principle, there should be no way to predict in advance by any means whether it's a zero or a one next time.
Sure.
And it's producing these about 1,000 per second.
Hmm.
It enables us to make a measure of something called entropy, which is a measurement of randomness. And the hypothesis of what we do in this experiment now, which has been running for 15 years continually, is that if mind and matter are related in some way, mm-hmm. which experiments like Dr. Emoto and many others have seemed to suggest, mm-hmm. then if you end up with a moment of unusual order in the mental space mm-hmm. due to something like attention to the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. then maybe the physical world will become ordered as well. And so we use our random number generators to measure order because, by definition, a random number generator should produce no order at all. That's
sure.
why it's random.
Interesting. Professor Radin, sorry to interrupt, my friend, but I just wanted to make a quick station break. For those who are just tuning in, this is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. We have a fascinating interview with Professor Dean Radin of the Institute for Noetic Sciences of Petaluma, California. We're talking to him now. Just real quick before you go on, Professor Radin, and I'm sorry, I should have mentioned this earlier. For the many lay people in the audience who don't know what quantum means or quantum mechanics, I know you had a definition of it in your wonderful book, Entangled Minds. Could you perhaps give that to our listeners so the lay people could understand quantum mechanics or quantum physics?
Well, in essence, it's a branch of physics which started by looking at the behavior of elementary particles, mm-hmm. like atoms and electrons and protons and subatomic world, and also phenomena like light, which we can think of as particles of light or photons. Mm-hmm. So it turns out that most of the time people live in a common sense world where objects look separate and things are pretty big, about our size. The moment you get out of the everyday world, where we start using instruments like microscopes or telescopes, mm-hmm. and you're seeing the world of the very big, like the universe, mm-hmm. and the world of the very small, like little tiny particles and viruses and much smaller than that, you need a different kind of physics to explain how those things work.
Sure.
And the different physics gives rise to a different understanding of reality itself, because mm-hmm. when we look down into the world of atoms and below atoms, the behavior is nothing like what we're used to in the ordinary everyday world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The thing is, though, that as far as we can tell, the everyday world is made up of atoms. It's made up of particles of light. It's made up out of these very tiny things, mm-hmm. which means that while our everyday world has a certain sense to it, which we would call classical physics,
mm-hmm.
the classical physics is then a special case. It's a description of the world that works at the human level, but that's not really all it is. It's built up from a different kind of reality that is very peculiar from an everyday stance. And as the point of the book, Entangled Minds, is that when you look at the peculiar way that the world comes from, this quantum deep physics world, it starts to sound very similar to what people talk about in terms of psychic or mystical experience,
mm-hmm.
namely that basically everything is connected, that the description is of what's happening at that level is no longer about matter and energy, but more like informational relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And that there seems to be something peculiar about the notion of consciousness mm-hmm. and that level of reality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I just said, of course, is not considered a mainstream position within physics today, but there are many physicists, mm-hmm. including the developers of quantum mechanics, who thought that it probably is not possible to completely extract consciousness from our understanding of very deep physics.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a long-winded, although very short, explanation of classical physics, which is the everyday world, and quantum physics, which is our deeper understanding of the world.
Sure.
And by the way, quantum physics is not the end of the story. Mm-hmm. There are many physicists who are very interested in what must be below, metaphorically, what's mm-hmm. below quantum physics. What's the sub-quantum world actually like?
Fascinating.
And that will be, I'm sure that will arise over the next 20 to 50 years as physicists get a better and better idea about what is the actual nature of physical reality.
Sure, sure. Well, I'd love to ask you more about your Global Consciousness Project. I know that you've mentioned remote viewing in your book as well, and Yuri Geller. Yuri Geller was on my show twice last year. Just an amazing guy. I really enjoyed listening to him. He's one of the most positive people I've ever met, actually. And I do remote viewing myself, but you know, you ask yourself from a scientific viewpoint, how is that possible? How can the mind travel, for example, into the future or to other places on this planet and see what people are doing? I've had instances before where I've been able to communicate with people, with friends, people I'm close to, from far distances, and I know what they're thinking, or else you get a premonition. Rupert Sheldrake was on my show last month, and he's doing a study now in London of studying how people have the premonitions of telephone calls coming in. And the accuracy, it's not a random thing. It's the chances are very high that people who have the ability can actually tell who's calling. But you always have that kind of like a sixth sense people have. And I was going to ask you about your Global Consciousness Project. You mentioned 9/11 in your fascinating book, Professor Radin, Entangled Minds. Do you see anything in the future in your Global Consciousness Project for what's happening, what might be happening in this country or around the world in the future, premonitions of future events?
Well, that project is not really designed to act as a prediction tool.
Mm-hmm.
It's the equivalent of a telescope looking at a very far distance away from something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a passive perceptual instrument. And while we do occasionally see what looks like a precursor within the data from that experiment,
mm-hmm.
In prior to large-scale events like earthquakes and sometimes terrorist acts, we don't know enough yet to be able to say when we see such a signal, we don't know what's going to happen. We just know that something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It's not very useful at this point as a prediction tool, but that said, it does suggest that with more study, we might be able to figure out, based on the data, what is likely to unfold and approximately when, and if we're lucky, even where. So those are possibilities, but we don't know enough yet.
Hmm. Fascinating. Well, I'd love to have you back. We've got about 15 minutes left, plenty of time to talk, Professor Radin, but I'd love to have you back at some point in the future to talk about your consciousness project again. What kinds of things are you working on now besides the Consciousness Project, things that you're kind of like in the back burner or projects you'd like to do?
Well, one study we've been doing is on mediumship. This, of course, is our psychics who specialize in speaking to people who are supposedly dead. And part of the question then is that if you have a medium whose experience is that they're talking to somebody who's departed, and that the information that they're getting from that person is correct and verifiable and was not due to something like cold reading or to some mundane reason like they did a search on Google and found out about the person. If it's a legitimate information that is being obtained, how did it happen? So we're doing experiments looking at, among other things, the neuroscience involved. We're looking at the electrical activity of the brain in a medium as the medium does a reading of a person. And our first study on this has been published already, and what we asked the medium to do was do your normal connection. They sometimes work through guides, sometimes they don't have guides, but do connect to a departed person and do a mediumship reading. And meanwhile, we look at their brain. And now, just imagine that you're getting information from somebody. Don't actually do it, but just imagine that you're doing it. And we again look at the brain. Then we read them a story to see how the brain responds when listening to a story about doing a reading. And a few other different kind of mental states. So it's all mental stuff. And what we're interested in is the brain operating in a different way when they're doing mediumship as compared to when they're imagining it or hallucinating it or listening to a story? And to make a long story short, the answer is yes. The brains of mediums are different when they're doing mediumship than when they're not doing mediumship, or they're simply imagining. So this does not tell us yet where the information comes from. It could be telepathy, it could be clairvoyance, we don't know where it comes from. But it does tell us that, as with practically everything else we know having to do with cognition and perception, that the brain is a good reflector. It's an objective reflector or a correlation to what's happening subjectively. And so this tells us that the mediums are not faking it when they say that they're in communication with a departed person. They're doing something, and they're not making it up. Then the next stage, which we're working on now, is trying to figure out when a medium gets correct information as compared to incorrect, because mediums are not 100% correct, is there something different in their brain when they're correct versus incorrect?
Well,
and if there is, then that may provide a clue as to what kind of processes are necessary in order to contact whatever it is that they're contacting. So that's the project that's underway.
I would like to volunteer for your project, if you don't mind. I come from a psychic family. I've been in touch with my dad. My dad passed away in March of 1999, and my foster mother, Terry, beautiful, wonderful woman, taught me how to contact the other side, and so I've been receiving messages from the other side, oh boy, for the last probably easily 20 years, 15, 20 years. My dad's here now, so is my foster mother, Terry. Terry passed on a couple of years ago. My dad passed on 15, 16 years ago. I talk to him all the time. It's normal for me to talk to them. I also have about 8 to 10 different relatives on the other side. I call them my beautiful angelic family. And it's normal for me to talk to them all the time. I actually have, I think I've got more friends who are, most of my friends are dead, actually. Just kind of a joke. But it's easy for me to do it. I just consider it normal now. So.
Yeah, and the mediums that we've worked with are all professionals in the sense that that's what they do. So it's true. We didn't know how difficult it would be to get the mediums for this experiment. We've worked now with 18 different mediums. And maybe it's because we live in Northern California, but it turned out to be fairly easy to find people who are either professional mediums or are talented in that regard in one way or another. So we're slowly making progress on the neuroscience involved and trying to understand both where the information comes from and how to interpret it, given that I'm sure from your internal experience that while the person is physically dead, that mentally they're not dead somehow.
No, they're not. They
exist. And I know, in just the same breath, that from a conventional point of view, like if you talk to most psychologists or most scientists, it sounds crazy because you're connecting to what? Like, you know, that. So we live in a very interesting world where, from a scientific perspective, the notion of what mediums do is pretty close to crazy.
Sure.
On the other hand, from your experience and from what we've been doing in the laboratory, it's pretty clear that something interesting is going on.
Oh, sure.
So we live in that strange middle world where we're using scientific methods and we publish in scientific journals, but we're exploring these issues of people's experience that doesn't quite fit in with things that we understand yet.
My next guest for the next hour is a wonderful lady named Suzanne Ward. Her son passed away in 1980 at the age of 17, and he's been in touch with her actually ever since for, 30, 40 years now. And I printed everything, all of the blogs off the Internet, and his accuracy rate is near 100%. I also wanted to tell you, too, that there is a spirit here who's just popped in. I've been in touch with him before, and he says hello. It's Albert Einstein. He's been on my show several times in the past with Professor Rupert Sheldrake of London and Jerry Pullock, the University of Washington. But he likes what you're doing, and he just says, keep up the good work.
Well, that's great. And if he could send me a message by any means at all about to help me on our studies involving quantum mechanics, I'd be very appreciative.
All right. He's just telling me now, do you meditate? Can you meditate?
Do.
Okay. He wants you to meditate early in the morning if you can. He knows you have a busy schedule. Early in the morning is a nice quiet time. You can also do it just before you go to sleep and just try to quiet your mind, and he will come to you. The spirits themselves, it's much easier for them in the fifth dimension to communicate with us through thought. I mean, they can appear as orbs sometimes to us. Sometimes you'll see them out of the corner of your eye because they're from another dimension. But the easiest way is through thought, and that goes for all my listeners, people listening out there. If you want to contact your the good spirits or your relatives, just sit quietly. Stay away from alcohol and drug abuse because that'll interfere with the reception. But as long as your mind's clear, usually first thing in the morning's good. He just told me he will come to you, and he really likes the work you're doing. So keep up the good work.
I just said. I will look forward to that. I'll try that tonight.
Okay. Yeah, he will come to you tonight. And then any question you like. Now remember, when you send him a question mentally, usually the spirits on the other side, they know you're the question you're answering, you're asking, and they will immediately answer your question or answer your question mid-thought during the when you ask the question. So my own experience with it happened in 1994 when my dear late foster mother Terry, I walked into her apartment and she knew everything I was going to ask. She told me things. I sat down and she read my mind completely and told me things which were 100% accurate. She was her accuracy rate was about 100% over the years, close to 100%. And now I have that ability too. It's a real gift. You have a lot of spirits on the other side helping you, Professor Radin. They're all cheering you on.
I appreciate any encouragement that we can get. And I've heard that from other mediums as well, that they pretty much say the same thing. So I'm always happy to have some help.
Well, I want to tell you, too, and this often happens in my studio when I'm doing a radio program. It's not planned at all, but when the spirits come in and the angelic spirits come in, my studio literally lights up. It gets very bright white around it, and it's very bright white light now. And this is from Albert Einstein and the many spirits that are helping you and helping me too today. The purpose of my radio show is to raise human consciousness to make this a better and happier place to live. And they're all thanking you for your wonderful work. And they're just saying, keep up the good work, so which is wonderful.
Well, thank them for me.
I am. And
okay.
If you need a medium for a guinea pig, I'd love to do it. But we have about a little over 2 minutes left, and I just wanted to go ahead and make a quick announcement that this, for the people who are just tuning in, this is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW here in Bellevue, Washington, 1150 a.m. We're speaking with a wonderful, fascinating professor, Professor Dean Radin of the Institute for Noetic Studies in Petaluma, California, about his fascinating scientific work. During the next hour, we will be interviewing Susie Ward, who is a wonderful psychic. She's been a medium. She's been in touch with her son, who passed away in 1980. And I know she'll have some very interesting out-of-this-world things to say. But, Professor Radin, I want you to go ahead and have the rest of the time. We've got about a minute and a half left, and I want you to wrap up the hour, please.
Well, so what I didn't have a chance to talk about is my new book, Supernormal.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of that book is to address ancient legends about the development of supernormal abilities through the practice of meditation. And I use the Indian sage Patanjali, who wrote the Yoga Sutras, which are considered the classical yoga book from about 2,000 years ago. A chapter in that book talks about how to use meditation in such a way as to develop psychic abilities, and actually even more than psychic ability. So I address that legend, basically, from the point of view of a scientist, and ask, how much of this can we believe? And the long story short is that it's pretty clear to me, and I try to lay it out in the book, that Patanjali was not spinning fairy tales. He was telling it the way it actually is, roughly 2,000 years ago, and he was describing what at that point had been an oral tradition. So we don't know how far back the origins of yoga actually goes. And so people have known about these kinds of phenomena and how to develop them for a very, very long time. So for people who'd like to read the first chapter of the book, it's available through my website, supernormalbook.com.
Professor Radin, thank you so much for coming on today, my friend, and I hope you have a wonderful spiritual day. And Albert Einstein will be visiting you later tonight.